The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to the She Word, conversations that women rarely have, but really should. And ladies and gentlemen, we are now in the no man's land. Yes, that scary era between Christmas and New Year. All of the Christmas and festive celebrations are well underway, and we're reflecting on all that we've enjoyed, but also looking forward to the new year. But this is a time when we can look at what we want to be in 2025, what we want to achieve. And whilst I am not a believer in New Year's resolutions, I think everybody takes this opportunity to really think about what they want to be in the year coming. So for most of us, if we're really honest, we see the new year as an opportunity to motivate ourselves to lose weight, get fitter, and feel better about ourselves. And whilst it's a great goal to have, few of us can achieve this or even maintain change. The global weight loss industry is valued at around 200 billion euros every year and expected to rise to about 370 billion euros by 2030. This means there's a massive industry that really feeds off us wanting to improve ourselves. Miracle cures such as Ozempic is saturating the market, and the Ozempic maker now worth over $500 billion has said themselves that the drug really only works for the period of time that you're taking it. And once you stop taking it, it no longer is effective. Let's face it, it's not a cheap solution, and not to mention the significant side effects. But all of this is evidence that we want to look good and we want to feel fitter. So how do we strive to be better, and what can go wrong? What is the secret to us being the very best? And how do we maintain balance when pressures of life get so hard? What happens when all of our best intentions just go right out the window? And what happens when nature takes over? If you're in your mid-40s or onwards, you're probably going to know what I'm talking about. As estrogen and progesterone and testosterone levels drop, women enter perimenopause and menopause. Weight management and maintaining a slim, slender figure becomes a whole new challenge. Women's bodies literally head south, both metaphorically and physically. But it's not our fault. And I want to say that again, it is not our fault. It really is the hormones. Bone muscle mass becomes weaker, our lower tummy pouch appears, and weight loss becomes extremely hard. So this special show is titled Women, Weight, Fitness, and Feeling Good. And it's all about taking a deep dive into how to achieve long-term impact. And I've got at the table with me three people who've dedicated themselves to the task. So I am really excited to be having this show. And I'm going to say Karen Schranz. Karen, welcome back. How many times have you been on the She Word now?
My fourth time.
This is your fourth time. You have been here as many times as I have. Yeah, absolutely, as many times as I have. And I'm so glad that you're on the show. You're a psychologist, you're a busy mum. And if that wasn't enough, in 2019, you took on bringing Six-Pack Revolution to Malta, striving to promote better health and living here on the Maltese Islands. But you're also very familiar with the struggles of us menopausal women. We've had a show recently, just back in October, where we talked about the struggles of menopause and what that looks like. And we're going to be touching on that. I'm glad you're here, because I think for younger women and men, you know, keeping fit and so on is just like a bit of a discipline.
Yeah.
Then you get to our age and it gets really complicated. So we're going to come to you in a second. Mel.
Hello.
Mel Mitzi DeMaio. This is your first time on the show.
It is.
I'm so glad. We're going to find out a little bit more about you in a moment. But you're a personal trainer, fitness instructor.
Yes.
You joined forces with Karen to work on SPR, as I mentioned, in 2019. But you're also, in the past year, a newlywed.
I am. Got married last June.
Well, congratulations, because I haven't seen you.
At the young age of 42.
Oh, wow. Hey, that's okay. I got married at 48. So we're, you know what I'm saying? Yes. That's cool.
When you know, you know.
Exactly that. So I'm going to find out a little bit more about you in a second, but I have to come to Scott Harrison. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, Scott,
I'm
first
nervous.
Of all.
purely because it's the she word and I'm wondering what everyone's going to be thinking. Right
well,
now.
I have to say, I restrained myself from getting you to dress up as a woman and wear a wig, but you are the brains and the brawn behind Six Pack Revolution, which has been literally a wide world phenomenon, a lifestyle program to help men and women to feel good, control weight and get fit. And what I really love about you, Scott, and the whole reason that I'm allowing you on this show is that your program, SPR, comes from lived experience.
It does.
And we talked about this in an interview way back, I think 2 years ago. I sat down with you and I was just blown away. It turns out that we're actually from the same town in the UK, a few streets away, and I had no idea of your backstory. We sat down, we talked about your backstory, about how you found yourself in a position where you just didn't like what you see, and Six Pack comes out of that. So if you haven't seen that interview, it's in the link below here. Go and watch it. It's really brilliant because it's not just about fitness. It's about everything that you were going through at that time. And I think for a man to be that honest and open is really, really important. But we don't let many men on the she word. It's only happened once before. But when you said that you would like to come on the show and you want to address the challenge of menopause, I was like, okay, we got to do this. We've got to have this because literally, it is a pain that every single woman is going to experience when she gets there. So those are my introductions. We have a man on the show. I don't know. Scott is looking at me and I'm like,
I wonder what everyone's thinking.
Well, you're nervous. I'm nervous. And we don't know how this is going to go because there's you know, more testosterone in the room. But I am really glad that you're here. So I'm just
picking up for us.
Absolutely. He's making up for our less lack
and
of
the in between.
You're sort of the control group, and then we've got us and Scott. That means that Scott's making up for the lacking of testosterone in
exactly.
two women.
Exactly.
I think there's a compliment
there's a
for Scott.
There's a balance.
Absolutely. So good to have you back on the show. Mel, what have I missed out about you?
Not much, I don't think. Obviously, I love being in the fitness industry. I love training people. I love helping people achieve their goals via our UK program and also doing one-to-one personal training, group training. It's just fantastic helping people, as you know, being in the sports industry, helping someone achieve where they want to be.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question before we come to Scott. Is this what you've always done?
No.
Ooh.
I was a primary school teacher.
Oh, my word.
I've only actually been training people for the last 5 years, full-time 4 years, self-employed.
What happened to the poor kids?
COVID happened.
Ooh.
And I had to teach children online and their primary school and they were distraught. And I just thought, I was such a hands-on teacher. I wanted to teach them holistically via doing stuff rather than just by talking to them. That when COVID came and they were sat behind a computer just staring at me like, what am I doing? What do I have to do? And it totally changed my perspective. Plus, I was juggling fitness, juggling teaching, and I'm a all kind of out there person. So if I was teaching, I'd give my all 24/7, which I couldn't then juggle fitness. So I decided, probably one of the reasons was COVID, to shift myself totally into the fitness industry and go full-time, self-employed during COVID.
Wow. I think that just is, that deserves a round of applause because that is absolutely crazy.
I thought
crazy.
It was now or never.
Good for you. But you've always been interested in fitness. You've always been fit.
I have. When I was at school, I used to do sports. I used to enjoy it, but I wasn't so passionate about it. I think the passion came when I got to that stage when you start putting on weight, you start feeling conscious about yourself, especially as a woman. Nowadays, we have so much online and you start comparing yourself, even with your friends, if you can't get into their jeans. And then it started, okay, what do I need to do for myself? And I thought the only way about it is, I always used to eat healthy. My mom is kind of a bit of a health freak since I was young. She's always about eating healthy, you know, a full meal. So it wasn't the food. It was more about not exercising, especially when you're at university, you sit there all the time. My main downfall was wine gums and biscuits.
Oh, but we all like a bit of wine gums, don't we?
I know.
Well, listen, I'm really super glad you're here because we've got a fitness angle. We've got a psychological angle because you're a psychologist. And of course, a lived experience with menopause. And then we've got Scott.
We have.
Hello. Hi. Scott, what did I miss out about you? Because your story is massive. And we don't want to go, as I said, we've got an interview. I really encourage everyone, go see it because it was really, really brilliant. But fill in the details about you.
Should we do the small version?
The tiny version, yeah.
Okay, so back in 2015, I decided after watching other parents at school looking relatively unhealthy and overweight that my New Year's resolution was going to be to get a six-pack. But I just decided to blog it on Facebook. It's hard to believe that this has all come out from this one decision. And 36 other people wanted to join me. I was telling them that I'm not going to mess around here. I'm doing this properly. If you're in, you're in.
But you obviously had a fitness background.
No.
What?
Well, I was a black belt karate instructor. But I was fit and fat, to be fair.
Is that possible?
Yeah. We've seen people run marathons. You've seen big people
this
can run
a marathon.
This is
very true,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
So I decided that I wanted a visual goal because I'm into visualization. So I chose a six-pack and I blogged it and these people joined me. And the results that came out of that were like, people go, how on earth did that just happen? Then I was begged to do another one. So I did another one, 120 joined that one. And again, the results were unbelievable. It wasn't a business at this point. I'm just blogging stuff on Facebook. Then I realized I had this flair for keeping people on track. So I then started to research a lot more. I've got, cut a long story short, I've now got a group of people behind me that are experts in, my wife's a nutritionist and she specializes in the application of nutrition to physical activity. We've got Karen, who's a psychotherapist. We've got a GP, who's also an Ironman. She's a bit nuts, to be fair, but it's a great to have a nutty GP. We've got a doctor of chiropractic. He holds the highest qualification in the world of a chiropractic doctor and a doctor of biochemistry. And they're kind of behind me, support me if I ever need them, which I tend to not need so much these days because I kind of, where it's built from the ground up, and I've managed to, I just kind of know all the answers myself, but they're there if I need them as well. And we created this most amazing life-changing program, which now has got participants in 90 countries and tens of thousands of people all over the world changing their lives physically, mentally, emotionally.
Did you ever think to yourself, oh, I might be onto something? I mean, did you, when you sat down to get your six pack, did you think that's what I want to do? Or did you just, was it really as organic as it sounds?
It was absolute accident. But I realized quickly that I had something while I was going through this stumble on this. And to be in a market that's so saturated, as you were talking about the numbers, right? And to be so, to spread so fast and so far, I knew I had something quite special. Because we try and change people's relationship with food, with drink, and with themselves. This is why it works so much more effectively than other programs. And we truly care about everyone that comes on. You know, we work night and day every day, helping them before they start till after they finish. And at the end, we teach everyone how to keep their results and still party twice a week.
See, this is what I like. And I'm going to jump in here and I'm going to start asking the questions because you mentioned all of this back experience, back knowledge, the research, whilst it's organic and it's grown and it was an accident, you've put all the work in there. So it's not just a program. This show is not all just about SPR. That's not what we're doing. We're not just going to be talking about Six Pack Revolution. I want to delve into what you just said there about the nutrition, about the psychology, about the body, about the biometrics, about the biochemistry and all these sorts of things and the lived experience. So you guys are all involved. As I just mentioned, you've come at this topic from very different angles. So we're going to take a holistic look, but I want to start off with a question I think every single one of us asks ourselves, and probably right now a lot of people are asking themselves as they head into the new year. Because interestingly enough, Scott, you mentioned that this came out from a New Year's decision.
It did.
So this time, this week, whilst we're in this no man's land, this is really important. So with all the pressures that we have on us today as women to aspire to be as perfect as possible, you mentioned that as well, Mel.
Oh,
we have so much pressure on us to look good. So when life really doesn't accommodate perfection, there's this backlash, right? There is a backlash going on, which is saying, actually, I should be accepted for exactly how I am, for exactly who I am. And I kind of want to find out, where do we sit? Where should we sit on that scale between saying, I'm a little bit overweight, you'll accept me, flaws and all, or actually, I want to be the very best that I can? Because I think psychologically, we need to find that middle ground.
I think one of the fundamental questions would be, do I accept myself the way I am? Not, I want everyone to accept me for who I am. Do I accept myself? Because there's so much pressure to be perfect, let's say. And internally, we feel shame if, for instance, our expectation of perfection is here, externally or internally, and we're here, that discrepancy creates shame within us. So, and shame is a very uncomfortable emotion to experience. So we're obviously unhappy if we're not accepting ourselves. So we feel shame. So that's the key question as well. Before we work on trying to get others to accept us, we have to accept ourselves.
I think Karen hit the nail on the head, because that's what it's about, especially, I know personally, personal experience is about accepting yourself. Do you really accept yourself? Are you happy within your own skin? I think especially nowadays, I see it a lot with clients who have teenage daughters. There's so much pressure. If you think we had pressure when we were younger, there's so much pressure now. I have a 13-year-old niece, and you can see it.
If you don't live up to the expectations of external or internal expectations, then you feel shame.
Exactly. I think we just don't accept ourselves. And I think you only accept yourself when you get older and you jump over that hurdle.
Well, yes and no.
I spend most of my time getting people to stop focusing what other people are doing and to focus on what they want. And it's not always about weight either. I think if they can focus on, like, when I talk about six pack, I talk about six pack of core values rather than the actual visual six pack. Now it's kind of moved on from there. So instead of spending all your life worrying about the weight, and what about the strength, the power, the resilience, the vitality, the energy? And when you change your relationship with food and drink, and you start to consume those things, I think your mindset changes as well, because your mind is a part of that body too. So when you poison your body, you're poisoning your mind, and then you haven't got the balanced state of mind that can look at things from a balanced point of view. So when you're looking at yourself, when you're eating healthily, you haven't got the alcohol and the anxiety from the alcohol and the feeling of bloating and all those, because I think those feelings make you dislike yourself more than the actual look sometimes. You can feel unhealthy.
It's a shame, the sense of the self-disgust that can make you feel bad rather than, because if you accepted yourself the way you looked, you're not going to be feeling shame, so you're going to be feeling okay.
There's a lot of people that still have, that have no fat and no
and
weight
still feel shame.
And they still feel that.
Oh, I was one of those.
And a lot of that, for many years. A lot of that comes from a poorer mindset, which nutritionally you can really help.
It's interesting you say that, because we've had three shows so far on eating disorders as well, and I was under the impression that eating disorders, you know, we have anorexia, bulimia, we also have binge eating, and then there is an additional one which is absolute control, and not necessarily control of quantity and calories, but control of food groups. And generally speaking, if you have an eating disorder, you're going to experience not just one part of that, but all of that. And I think that comes back to what you're saying about, and just when you said that, Scott, just for the first time, I'm thinking to myself, as somebody who's had eating disorders, if you are not in a healthy mind place because you've been living on a 300 calorie day diet, you aren't going to see things well, because your mind is
malnourished. I was severely bulimic for over 30 years, and it was only when I changed my actual diet did it all stop. It stopped immediately.
Can I stop you and ask you to say that again? Because this is where the lived experience comes in, and this was part of our interview, and I had forgotten about that until we sat down at this table. You had bulimia for 30 years. You're a guy, you're a nice looking guy, and you had bulimia for 30 years.
Yeah.
And you had this right up until your decision to get the six pack, or it was just part of your life?
I would go into an all-you-can-eat buffet and binge, throw it up till I was bored. If I was on holidays, buffets always on holiday. I always remember the buffets because I think it was worse then. My wife would know. I'd have tears in my eyes as I come out of the toilet because I've been sick. And, it was only when I did the six-pack revolution that it actually stopped. And I've even relapsed before. Not often now, thank God, but, yeah, it's a funny old thing.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because I think that part of the conversation today is relating to other women and men about what we're actually going through, what we're really living, what the emotions are that we're really feeling, because we're in this point where we've got the new year is here and expectations are high. So I want to move on and thank you for sharing that. I really, really appreciate. But I want to move on and ask, and I'm going to stick with you, Scott. So what stops us? What stopped you from being healthy? We've talked about the fact that we all take comfort in food. We love food. Food is there to be enjoyed, to be quite honest with you. And probably over Christmas, we've all been enjoying a little bit more than we'd like to admit. But why do we end up eating what is convenient or overeating at Christmas and overindulging? Why is it so hard to find time to be fit? Because let's face it, if there were none of these barriers, we'd all look amazing. But these barriers, I think we need to address this as well. These barriers are very real. The barriers that stop us from being exactly who we are very real.
I call a lot of the stuff that we eat the drugs. So the caffeine, the alcohol, the salt, the sugar, it's all very addictive food. You crave it.
Salt is addictive. Salt can be addictive. Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know what it's like. Once you've had a drink, you're literally chucking the crisps in like they're going out of fashion. Don't you? You cannot.
Anything salt vinegar.
That's why they give them. That's why they give them to you in the pubs, because you're going to drink more, and then you're one. It's like a vicious circle, isn't it? You're drinking more and eating more and drinking more and eating more, and alcohol is a huge thing for all humans, right, all over the world. So, and then you make poor choices. When you've had too much to drink, you know, all hell breaks loose and you just don't care.
You go to the kebab shop.
Yeah, you just don't care. But also the convenience of, you know, there's a lot of people that think, we're not taught to cook. The amount of people that come on my program, they don't know how to cook, is shocking. And we have the convenience. It's cheaper in some places. If you're going to go and shop at places like Iceland and stuff like that, it's a lot cheaper. So people that haven't got any finances can, it's a quick fix all the time. But people don't realize how tasty normal food is. And when I say normal food, because so many people think normal food is the McDonald's or the takeaway. Normal food is what we should all be eating, which is in the supermarket, in the market, and the fresh food and the fresh veg and the fresh fruit, and how tasty you can make that.
You're talking about clean food.
Clean food, if you want to call it that.
Clean food, because clean food is a phrase that I've heard here in Malta quite often. Well, I want to stick with that and come to the ladies here, because let's face it, Scott, clean food is great and it tastes good and it can taste brilliant, but it's not as quick and easy as grabbing something from the supermarket that's in a packet. And if you've got kids running around, or if you've got a busy lifestyle and a heavy day on scheduled, that's not quite as easy, is it? Is it?
Okay, I'd say clean eating is easy once you know how to eat clean. I think everyone blows it out of proportion. Everyone starts thinking, oh, to make a clean meal, I need to cook all these different foods all together and make it super exciting. Well, clean eating can just be some chicken breast grilled. You know, it takes, 5-10 minutes quickly, boiled vegetables or even grilled vegetables in the same pan. And then you can have, I don't know, chopped avocado on the side, whatever. Just a quick, clean, easy plate.
Or just making healthy choices at the supermarket. Let's say instead of getting the fully sugar-laden yogurts, just get clean yogurts and add berries.
Yeah, but okay, so I'm being a bit devil's advocate, but coming back to something that Scott just said, that sugar-laden yogurt is going to give you a bit more of a buzz than one without, surely?
Not if you put a nice handful of fresh berries in your yogurt and you've got now more texture, the sugar's there,
you've
but
got
it's the right sugar.
Sugar's there.
And the other thing is, I think people... as soon as you sort of talk about meal prepping or something like that, people go, "Ah, I don't want to do that."
Yeah, right. Me.
But when you buy that ready-made packet stuff, that's when you have a different. There's a tug of war going on in your body. It's discombobulated. It's this kind of stuff where, like, so how do I give this as an example? Certain things you eat will spike your insulin in different ways. So let me give you let me think about if you're going to have a deep pan pizza from Pizza Hut, it feels great for about 2 minutes and then you crash through the floor and you want to go to bed because you're in a food coma, right? That's what you don't want to eat and have that up and down going on in your body. Whereas you can make a nice, healthy homemade pizza that doesn't take very long and you haven't got this big lift and crash. And afterwards you actually feel alive instead of wanting to go to bed. And when you buy the stuff off the shelves, you're not in control of that.
Ooh, that's really interesting. I do have to just say to She Worders right now, I did say to Scott, if he managed to get the word discombobulated into the conversation on this show, I'd give him a ting. Ting! but coming back to what you're saying, so actually that consistency without this and this, this is super interesting.
If you eat in balance, you balance your body, you balance your hormone, that in turn balances your mind and everything comes together. And when this works, it all works.
Okay. That is a big statement.
I have experience in that. While doing my studying I was writing out my dissertation for my master's. As I said before, I was picking up the wine gums, picking up the biscuits. And then literally one day I had brain fog. The next day I had brain fog. I had brain fog. You can ask Karen. She was witness to that. I was like, I just can't write. And then all of a sudden I just started exercising, eating healthy. And oh my brain literally just went from this to this. I was alive again. I was basically, my brain was malnourished. So I just had so much brain fog. I just could not focus. I was devastated because I had all the evidence. You know, Karen's daughter at that time was in my class. I had gathered all the evidence and I couldn't actually write it. And I was like, but I have it. Why can't I put it into words? It was the food.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody referring to a malnutritioned brain before. But now that we're talking about it, I'm beginning to sort of see how that has appeared at various times.
Every cell in your body is fed by what goes through your mouth, right? Unless you're on a drip, it goes through your mouth. Every single cell, to your fingertips, to your brain, your earlobes, everything. So if you don't put the right thing in, it's not going to work at its optimum. Simple.
So we literally are what we eat.
You are what you eat.
Yeah, percent.
And also,
that makes sense if you think about it, right? Nothing in your body gets fed any other way or nourished in any other way other than what goes through your mouth.
Yeah, I know. But now that we're sitting down and actually saying it here at the table, I'm just kind of like, wow. Okay, so that's making me feel a lot more conscious about what I'm putting into my body. And I think, and a question for you, Karen, we're going a tiny bit off topic, but if somebody's going through a bad patch, they've just broken up with their boyfriend or something, and we all do it when we've had a bad time, we go to the fridge and we eat the chocolate and we drink the booze. That's probably going to be the worst thing that you could possibly do, because that's going to put you in a bad place.
The thing is, we are wired to seek comfort through food from when we're babies. Like, imagine a newborn baby crying, its mum picks it up, gives it a bottle, feeds it, puts it to her breast. So there, we are taught to associate comfort with food, because that's how we're. What's better than being in your mum's arms, being given a bottle or a breast milk, and also what's in the breast milk is like high in carbohydrates and things like that. So make you feel good, makes you feel calm. So we're taught from a really early age to associate food with comfort.
So this isn't wrong. I mean, it's not like everybody who takes comfort in food should feel shameful or guilty.
But
we shouldn't feel shame or guilt. We should just retrain ourselves.
Just blame the parents.
It's always the parents.
When my little boy falls over, what do? You give him a lollipop, don't you?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, you do. It's true. You know, my son's middle name is Lollipop. But it's true, isn't it? You're saying you reward.
Yeah. Well, dentists used to do that as well back in the days. They give them like treats when they go. Now they
absolutely
give them like teddy bears.
Even as adults.
The only reason I went to the dentist.
Even as adults, when we reward someone, we'll go and buy them a bottle of something. won't we? Or the champagne cork gets opened, and so it's
it
all,
starts
it's
at birth and it
carries on.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
I was, but also often we're feeding our minds, not our tummies, because our tummies are happy with the healthy food, but it's our brain that craves the unhealthy food, the comfort food, what the, you know, the unhealthy comfort food. So if we, and we often feed our emotions rather than our tummies. So if we learn to listen to our emotions and understand what they need, like I'm bored. So do something with it. Don't eat. You're feeding your emotion, not your...
Going back to what you were saying about when partner leaves us or we're down or depressed, the first thing we do is go, if you think about it,
you need company at that point, or maybe a conversation rather than me.
Yeah, but when we're dealt a blow like that, any blow, could be you lose a job, it could be you lose a partner, whatever it is, we should, that's the one time in our life you should strengthen your foundations and not weaken them, isn't it? But as humans, we do the complete opposite. Mm. So you know the old analogy of the flat tire. If you've got a flat tire, you would pump it up, fix it, replace it with the spare tire if you can't fix it, check the other three so you can carry on your journey. But we don't. We slash the other three tires and we're stuck. We can't go any. We can't go further forward.
Oh, this is good.
You're going to start using that, aren't you?
Not only am I going to start using it, but I might just nick Scott from time to time and stick him on the show. And that you can be here on the She Word in a skirt and a wig.
I've got hours of this stuff to drive me mad. It's my favourite part, is the psychological part of lots of things. But so that's the moment when we should be strengthening our foundations, but we don't. We throw ourselves further down the hole. And this is why there's probably only 1% of successful people in the world. And when I say, I don't just mean financially. I mean, like, they just seem to touch everything and it turns to gold. Because when the going gets tough, they get going and they start climbing when the obstacles come, instead of sitting down and think, I can't do that. Or I must, you know. And it's not easy. But you can train yourself to do it.
Yes, exactly. You can train yourself to do it. And this is why I really wanted to sit down with you guys and talk about the psychology as well as the sort of practicals. Because I think for a lot of us, we've gone down the route of trying to improve ourselves, losing weight, feeling good, being fitter, and it just doesn't work. And until you get the psychology, until you get your head in the right place, you're really fighting yourself and fighting what you know. What you just said, Karen, about that whole thing about comfort, and that's what we've learned. And what Scott's just said there is that anybody who does that is not, as again, shouldn't feel shame. It's what we were taught.
Shame does come in. For instance, imagine like you're feeling lonely. So rather than seek company, you eat. You comfort eat. Then you're not just dealing with the initial emotion like loneliness. Then you maybe feel fine for a little bit, but then you're dealing with the secondary emotion that comes with overeating or eating the wrong thing or whatever. The shame that, shit, why did I eat that?
The guilt,
the shame. So, I think it's really important to learn to recognize what you are feeling and how you can handle it better rather than through food. I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling angry. Okay, what do I need to do in a healthy way with my anger? What I'm feeling disappointed. You know, they're all natural human emotions that if we give them their time to be lived and felt, they'll pass. Mm-hmm. But we numb them with food and...
I think you feel, and if your diet is poor, then you already have a weaker mind, because what we said earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
So therefore, when these other things come to you, you've got no chance, you know. But the biggest problem I think of us people today, of humans today, in all over the world, is that if you think about it, when we were younger, we would have treats. And those treats were not all day, every day. They would be maybe at the weekend when you're watching a movie or something like that. And that would be your treat. But now people live on treats. And the only time they go and eat how the human body should be fed is when they're so feeling so ill or rough from spending several months just eating and drinking themselves into oblivion. They'll go and do a couple of weeks or a dry January or something like that. As soon as they feel good again, they go back to...
See, this really beautifully segues onto my next question, Scott, because my next question is, if the industry at the moment is worth 200 billion euros a year, how is it that we are not all exactly where we want to be? That is a lot of money that is out there in an industry to make us seemingly fit and healthy?
Well, I would say not everyone in that industry has got your best interests at heart. Mm. That would be my first thing. There are people that do have, but not all of them. And just finishing that point, we need to flip the script and where we go back to healthy is normal and we have our treats. Mm. And then you live the best of both worlds because you don't feel so rough. You are in control. Your head is in the right place for when life's obstacles come, because they will. No one gets away with it. And we can overcome all obstacles that come our way. But when our brain and body isn't in unison and doesn't work properly, the obstacles are much bigger than they need to be.
Okay, so I'm going to stick with this. I'm going to stick with this just for a second, because you just said something right there that I'm kind of really relearning myself, everything that you're saying, as if it's the first time I've heard it, which it probably is. But if your mind is, let's say I wanted to lose weight, get fit, feel better, and get to be eating healthier, and I find myself a program, or as I mentioned right at the very beginning, I decide I'm going to go on to Ozempic or something like that, then if I am, so for instance, a carb-only diet or a protein-only diet, which are extremely popular at the moment, surely then I am also malnutritioning.
You are.
Providing my brain with not enough nutrients. It's not going to help me. It's not going to be effective for me holistically. Holistically, I'm doing detriment to my body.
Well, these quick fix fads, the craziest thing is that they're not fast, in the sense of if you eat how the human body should be fed, which is just a balanced plate of food, balanced throughout the day with hydration, it's faster, healthier. You don't want to throw your calories through the floor. If you're already overweight, your metabolism is going to be low anyway. You start dropping your calories through the floor, you're just bringing it lower. You're kicking someone in the head while they're down. You want to bring them up, not the calories down. So you want to nutrify that body rather than malnourish it. And then the results come so much faster. And then all the other benefits come as well. The chronic illness disappears, the inflammation disappears, the sleep gets better, the anxiety disappears. And you've got that strength and power within you to then realize to yourself, oh, as it goes, this feels better than I've ever felt in my life. And then you can get addicted to that. And you can still have your treats. And then those treats don't affect you in the same way as when you're already down.
It's all about education, though. Like you said, oh, I didn't even realize this. Well, most people probably don't. Most people probably don't realize the effect food has on their bodies. That's why going back to an educator, back in the days, obviously, when I was educating children, it's all about educating the children from when they're young. What does a healthy plate of food look like? A lot of children don't even know what a healthy plate of food looks like, let alone what adults do. Because obviously, if an adult is always shoving the chicken nuggets and chips in their face because it's quick and easy, for a child, I'm eating chicken and potatoes.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know, they're not educated enough. And then this is why we need to change the cycle. If we start educating children, we might not be able to change our generation, although we can try, but at least if children have the right education and they know
it
becomes a norm. And that's how we can change this, especially in Malta with the high rate of obesity in children as well as in adults. That's how we can change this vicious cycle. If we start the education when the children are younger, then they're going to grow up knowing what a healthy plate of food looks like. It is okay to have a balance. We all know that. Well, some struggle with that in life, being 100% kind of girl or nothing. But obviously, we all know there's balance. So we can also teach that to children. It's fine if they go out at the weekend and they do want to have their pizza. That's absolutely fine. But they shouldn't be eating chicken nuggets, chips, pizza, soft drinks every day. Why not? Educate them. What's going to happen to their brain? What's going to happen to their bodies?
I'm going to come back and I'm going to be devil's advocate for a second. So some of that about having healthy mind, healthy body, eating well, eating clean, eating good food, not eating chips, not eating crisps, Burger King, you know, all this sort of thing. I think most people would know that. So, and I'm going to come back once again. Why aren't we doing it? Why
some
are
don't
we
care.
Not?
Some oh, people don't care. What? Yeah, some people don't care. They don't.
Most parents were not going to tell you they don't care about their kids. And we're not going to sort of just jump onto to parents. But you're saying that there are people that don't care.
There are people that don't care because they've been brought up that same way. And they think, well, I'm fine. So it didn't hurt me, but then you take a look at them and you think, well, you're not seeing what I'm seeing. I'm not saying that's everyone. I'm just saying that's one strata. You've got, Mel's right, you know, you've got to try and educate people. But adults, I think health has become a more visual thing now, don't you? I feel like there's more people are trained to look at it. I think we take notice of it a bit more. But I think just as the population's growing, the problem, the obesity is growing with it. So I don't.
See, this is really interesting, and it kind of really touches on what you just said there. When I was a child, not far from where you live now, there was the very first McDonald's in the UK. And we would go to McDonald's once a year on our birthdays only. Now, forgive me, Mum, for saying this, I wasn't brought up in a house where the food was that brilliant. So, she's going to kill me. But there used to be a thing when I was growing up called Smash, which was tinned mashed potato. Yeah. Goodness knows what was in it, but it was tinned mashed potato. You mixed it with water and it was quite disgusting.
Yes.
That had
a powder one as well.
Powder. And it was quite a regular feature in our house. I actually really loved it, but simply because it was fast, it was quick, and you could stick a load of cheese on it and it actually turned out all right. But we were not overweight. It does look like the population across Europe, but also here in Malta, is just heading towards more and more obesity, which, bearing in mind that we have this 200 billion euro industry every year, doesn't make sense in my head.
But the programs aren't dealing with the problem. That's the thing. The problem's here. So if you are, you know, a lot, I'm not going to mention names, but if you know a lot of programs that still allow you to have your sins and still allow you to have the wine every day and still have a piece of chocolate every day, they're not dealing with the reason why that person's overweight and got that addiction in the first place. So it's better to find a program that removes all of that, replaces it with things to allow you to come off the drugs, and then you gain your control back, you gain your power back. And then you decide what you eat instead of the food deciding when you eat it, if you know what I mean. You just chuck it in, you don't even know.
The thing is, I'm just thinking that the food industry is so huge. If there's a huge fitness and health industry, there's the food industry that's also super huge.
And junk food.
And media and advertising. And our brain is constantly being stimulated with images and whatever, you know, on TV and everywhere we look. So,
and also there's convenience. Fast food is convenient. Nowadays in Malta, you just pick up your mobile, go onto an app, order it. It's there within, 15 minutes?
That's true.
It's quick. It's easy. Sometimes it's actually cheaper. You know, these people, you can see in the supermarkets, their trolleys are full of the quick, easy pizzas. You know, they're all on offer. They're always on offer. It's funny how all the convenience food is mainly on offer. So I think people actually get into the right frame of mind. They think, okay, it's going to be quicker, it's going to be cheaper, and it's going to fill them up. And it's what they want. You know, a lot of people, they thrive on these kinds of food. I know that even I, as Karen was saying, if you're feeling down sometimes, you do want that pizza, you do want those carbs. Now I know why. I'm blaming my mother for giving me breast milk.
You're going to get all the mum she-worders coming back to you and giving you a really hard time. But I want to touch on both of these because this ties in with both what you've just said and what Scott said as well. But you said something back there, just Karen, you were talking about the industry and the food industry. Because, of course, I hadn't thought about this as well, because as much as we want to eat healthy, there is a massive industry that doesn't want us to eat healthy. And I always say, let's follow the money, see where it goes. And if any of us are really honest, I say this every time, and I happen to know this about one popular chocolate because I worked for the brand, that some foods actually do contain chemicals which keep us eating, actively contain those chemicals. I always say, and I'm not casting aspersions on this brand because I don't actually know, but the phrase is, once you pop, you can't stop. You open a tin of Pringles and you cannot stop until it's gone. I don't know any person, any woman who can actually just eat three and put it on the side.
Don't like Pringles.
Pringles are the best.
What are you talking about? Salt vinegar Pringles are up there with food of the gods.
Walkers.
Yeah. No, I love
all
Pringles.
The way.
Well, no, salt vinegar Pringles. Salt vinegar is the best. It's the salt, which I was telling you about before.
They're not actually, I don't know, they're not actually crisps. They're like fluffy pieces of...
Anyway, we're not going to annihilate. But my point being that when you open it, there are additives that can be put into food.
The salt and the sugar as well.
And also the salt and the sugar as well. As I said, I do happen to know, because I worked for the brand, there was a particular chocolate brand that had an additive which made it compulsive to eat. So you couldn't open.
That's actually shocking.
But Karen's just said, we have an industry. You know, the industry is not there to make us wonderfully healthy.
Well, basically, they're drumming us.
The industry is there to make us eat that food.
And then you've got a follow-up industry to deal with the illnesses that come from that food.
Right.
Which is what you were saying about the 200, the Ozempic worth 500 billion.
Yeah.
Now they can come in with their, so you got the big money, you said follow
it's
the
like
money.
Follow
the food, goes to the pharmaceutical, come back, and it's like this vicious circle.
Absolutely.
We should talk about Ozempic actually.
Well, let's do that, because I'm absolutely not going to shy away from that conversation, because it is, as we said, Mel, it is extremely popular on the Maltese Islands. And I do happen to know that some people are taking it probably without the guidance and the direction that they should have. And to most, it's a convenient pill that you can take or a convenient injection that you can take that will guarantee that you feel a bit sick when you eat certain foods, it puts you off your diet and so on. So it's going to stimulate weight loss. However,
there's no such thing as a weight loss or a fat loss drug. There's no injection, a pill, a potion. They don't actually remove fat. They just suppress your appetite. So it's an appetite suppressant. And that's all that's ever been made. All the ones all over the years have always just been appetite suppressants. And the problem is that all those side effects that come with it, they're not dealing with the problem. They're just sweeping it under the carpet. They're not changing someone's relationship with food, with drink, and with themselves. So as soon as they come off of it, back to square one. That's the problem. It doesn't actually give you a long-term solution.
So it's basically a plaster.
You can't stay on it forever. There's a good chance you'll be very ill from it. And as soon as you stop, you're back to the same person you were before. It's just a cheat.
So what we've actually said at the table here is, I think the one consistent theme is that for long-term gain, we have to change our mindset.
Totally.
Yep.
100%.
I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball into this, though.
The laugh.
Because that's all well and good, except that when you come to menopause, you can basically rewrite everything. Because menopause, as we know, Karen, we're both in menopause, and we know that your estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, as well as other hormones and other parts of your body, take a nosedive, and that has literally a nosedive. It's not like suddenly you're going to get huge impact on your body.
I can't wait.
Oh, I know. Well, listen, I will just say there is one really cool thing. You don't get period and period cramps anymore, and that is really cool.
One thing to look forward to.
Absolutely. But we've made it this far, and I think that's something else to celebrate. And now we're finding a lot more conversations about menopause, because you talked about the shame. There's been so much shame associated with menopause, and if it affects every single woman who is lucky enough to make it to her 40s, there is no reason why we should not be talking about it, finding solutions to the 60 plus symptoms that are now attributed to the menopause. And we didn't do anything. We just made it this far. We are not responsible. And I have to say, when we had a show about menopause, we had Deirdre Faruja on the show. And one of the reasons I put her sitting right where you are, Mel, is because I said to myself, you know, I do ultra running. But I only came to that late in the day. And I said to myself, if we have an Olympian sitting at the table and she cannot escape menopause, there literally is nobody who can escape menopause. It's going to happen. But what happens is there's estrogen, progesterone, some testosterone, goes through the toilet. your body reacts to that and it takes quite a while to get itself sorted exactly. out. I don't know if there's anything else to add to menopause, really. And I think that it's worth saying.
Blank, a brain fog.
So at that point.
I feel like I'm jumping in all the time.
Karen's hot flushes.
I don't get them, thanks
no,
to
we
HRT.
Don't get, we don't get.
She used to.
But HRT has solved yeah. all that.
But I feel like I've got too much to say, haven't I? I feel like I'm the only, like, I don't want to keep answering everything. And
no, but let's set the scene first, because you have an answer to this and I'm really interested. Let's set the scene. This happens to every woman. One of the symptoms is weight gain. And I always thought, I'm going to be really brutally honest here, I always, when I was a kid or as in my 20s or even my 30s, I'd look at older women who are in their 50s and I'd go, wow, they just let it go.
You know, you know what I mean? There's a double battle.
There's
a double battle going on there, because you've got the slower metabolism and everything. Also, your emotions are all over the place. So what do you do when you're feeling emotional? You comfort it. So, you know, you've not, so the hormones have made you, affected you all over, like in the way you, your body reacts to food, and your lack of estrogen makes you gain weight on your belly, plus your emotions being whatever, so you want to comfort it. So it's like really from all angles.
I hadn't even thought of that. And that comes back to what Scott was saying about exactly. about being your brain being malnutrition. Malnourished. But still, I will say, and I'm going to say it again, I did look at older women and just think they'd let themselves go. But it's a popular phrase, right?
It is.
And then you get here and you realise actually, and I want to be really brutally honest about this, that until you get to menopause, it's a bit like, I don't have children, but it's what I've heard. When you have children, you think you know it, and then it happens and you're like, whoa. And it's the same thing with menopause, whoa. Is there's no way to prepare for it, because you go through it and you're like, good Lord above, is there no end to this disaster that is menopause? There are, you and I are both on HRT, it's worth saying that, which helps. Combats it to some effect and it helps, but still.
But not the weight gain. I think HRT has made me gain more weight.
Ooh, really?
Well, I might.
Oh, here comes. Okay.
Before I start talking about menopause, first of all, because this is scary, right? Because a man trying to tell ladies about menopause is like,
menopause.
Yeah, is like is like really jumping into the dangerous pit.
Absolutely.
Right? So I'm going to be really careful,
especially with menopause.
And let me tell everybody as well. I'm an imposter. I didn't create a program that's for menopause, but it just so happens that I've found out through my experience with tens of thousands of women that you can control the symptoms of menopause with nutrition and exercise to quite a high extent, even to the point of where if you get it right and you are that person, a couple of weeks and the symptoms could be brought to a much more manageable level or even into complete remission. And we can also look at countries like Japan, where they have really a low level of symptoms when it comes to the menopause. Every woman will go through it, but their symptoms are pretty low. And that's because of the food that they eat. So as an example, you were saying about the estrogen that you drop. If you eat food that's high in phytoestrogens, like soya, which is a huge mm-hmm, over in Japan and China and places like that, lentils and all these things, which are all would be a staple on a healthy, balanced diet. And there's loads of other stuff. I don't want to spend an hour going through the whole nutrition table. You can really make a huge difference. And then combine that with the correct exercise, which will help with your muscle tone, your bone density, which is all things that diminish again when you're going through the menopause. You can come out of it as a strong person, maybe even driven into eating better and exercising because of the menopause, and then having all those other benefits once you're through it the other side, because you're already in now and you're a fit, healthy person.
So I'm going to ask a question.
It's a very positive view on it.
I am really excited by that. No, it's a super positive view, but I'm going to throw this into the table that that one of the symptoms of menopause that I think every single woman I've spoken to has experienced, we've talked about this, Deirdre mentioned this to quite an extent, is either depression or anxiety. Now, just listening to what you've just said there, Karen, about your brain and what you might go through when you hit the emotions of menopause, and also what Scott was saying back a minute ago about our brains being malnourished.
Malnourished.
Now we've got a big faux bar on the table. It would make sense that there are some things that we can do for menopause, anxiety, and depression that are not necessarily reaching for drugs, reaching for anti-anxiety tablets and these sorts of things. Even if you talk about going out and having exercise, we know that exercise
is amazing for anxiety.
Exactly, hits the endorphins, it gets you up, out, makes you feel better immediately. And there just is one big mess, isn't there? I'm going to just talk to Karen and just for a second, but when you get older, when you've made it to that point, because I think one of you, Mel, you said you get to a certain age where you don't care. Yes, you do. You get to, for me, it was 40. I woke up on at my 40th birth and I said, I've made it this far. I don't give a crap anymore, quite frankly. But then you get to this great place where everything slots into place and then your body gives up on you. And it's just like, are you serious? Sue Caruana said exactly the same thing.
I just accepted myself.
Exactly. You get to the best time of your life and then everything goes to shit, quite frankly. But that in itself induces when you gain weight and there's nothing you can do about it seemingly. And that gives you depression. That gives you anxiety. You just feel like there is no hope, which feeds the cycle.
Because you're experiencing that shame again of I'm not looking as good as I'd like to be. And that makes you feel you want to hide away. You feel less than. You want to just hide in a corner sometimes when you're not feeling as good as you'd like to look. Or how you expect, or how you think others expect you to look, because then you get the comments from people. Like, oh my God, you've gained the weight and what's wrong with your cheeks? And that's my mom told me. No, don't say that. Okay, edit that bit out.
We're not allowed to talk about Karen's mom's cheeks.
No, she told me what's wrong with your cheeks.
She said something about your cheeks.
There's nothing wrong with your cheeks.
No, I know.
This comes back to the mindset, doesn't it?
Please don't put that in. Because she listens to the show.
Okay, go back to the beginning.
I'm saying this comes back to the mindset though, doesn't it? Do you want to sit in that place where you're weaker, feeling lesser, allowing other people to dictate your fate and not move forward? Or do you use life's obstacles as a reason to fight instead of an excuse to fall? You've got a fork in the road at this point, haven't you? And look at the fork. One road, potentially, is a road with doctors and hospitals and tablets and inflammation and joints that hurt and can't get up the stairs, and because you've just kept poisoning yourself year after year after year. Or there's another road where you can actually pull yourself out of that fog. You can start to move forward. You can have less visits to the doctors. You can live more happy, vitality, strength, power, resilience, energy, and still indulge. You've got a choice to make.
And I think it's important to, the first step in that is awareness of that you are in this place and you can be spiraling and you've got a choice. So acknowledge the fact I'm in this place of potential spiraling, like I'm feeling sad or whatever. What am I going to do about it? Am I going to just stay where I am and spiral, or am I going to move forward and do something with it and positively?
And also, I think, like from a bit of a younger perspective, who's still heading into that phase, it's very slowly.
Child.
No, I think nowadays there's so much more awareness. One of the reasons this morning I discussed it with the clients, she was saying it's because of Trudy's show.
Oh, bless.
She said, because now even people who are in their early 40s are actually talking about menopause. They're talking about premenopausal symptoms. They're talking about what happens during menopause. So I think it's good. It's all about going back to the educational side. It's about people being aware of what's happening to their bodies, especially women. When you do start feeling the effects, you have an understanding. You don't go into that, I don't know, obviously I haven't been through it, but I think the more understanding you have,
you're able to recognize it acknowledge it.
Exactly.
And say, what am I going to do about
less
it?
Less anxiety.
Absolutely. The scariest thing for me was that I was going through symptoms that I, you know, I'm going to say it. I was going through three symptoms that I could not understand. Joint and muscle pain, fatigue, and butt sludge. There you go. I said it.
What? She said it.
I said I was going to say it. To Jay.
Did you have to say it? But when I had water in my mouth.
Well, because, I tell you why, because I want to bring this back into the conversation.
Oh, I can't wait.
Scott's looking at me with a smile. You guys are falling to so far. Because we know about the symptoms of hot flushes and night sweats. Every woman knows about that symptom. But butt sludge is something we don't...
I'm so going to be telling everyone about this symptom tomorrow. It's going to be the talk of my class tomorrow morning.
But it's actually medically proven that when you get into menopause, the probiotics in your stomach, the bacteria in your stomach is also affected by the hormonal change. And if you don't know it, when you get into perimenopause, you will... I always say to friends of mine, they're like, I don't know if I'm in menopause or perimenopause. How's your butt sludge? And people will always say, wow, you know, my poop is not what it used to be. Guaranteed, there's something there, which comes back to eating healthy. I want to touch on that, but I also, well, not the actual butt sludge, but I want to touch on another topic that Karen and I talked about before we came on the show, and that is libido. And it's something that we don't talk about. It's something that happens. And I just want to say this because menopause, it's not your fault. It is not your fault if your libido drops. It happens to every single woman in menopause. I've had friends of mine say, no, it won't happen. Will you tell me how you're going to keep your hormones, your testosterone levels at what they should be when you go into menopause without any medical intervention? It happens, and that is responsible. But you said something, Karen, and this brings us into the fitness side of how we should be thinking and the muscle mass and strengthening ourselves, because you said if you go to a gym, there's a good chance you're going to up your libido because you're going to increase your testosterone. If you're a gym owner, I've just done you a massive favor. There's going to be a ton of menopausal women going, quick, to the gym.
There is research that shows that when you do a resistance training workout, you're going to increase your testosterone levels.
Resistance training being?
Weights and...
Okay, cool.
You're going to increase your testosterone levels, even temporarily.
Also, your happy endorphins. Yeah. You never know when you're happy.
You know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing a ton of menopausal women all going to the gym going, and then running home. Quick, hon, I'm on my way back. Quick.
Or they were dragging an hour the PTs into the disabled.
Disclaimer. But that is, I mean, it is actually a tangible effect of menopause, and obviously the strength, the muscle mass is also important. So what do we need to be looking at for that?
When it comes to exercise, I always say, because again, this is a hard thing to get going, isn't it? Like if you've ever been to a gym and you get going and then you go on holiday for a few weeks and then you come back, it's that hard thing to get going again, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I tell everyone I come across that exercise is non-negotiable. Don't have the conversation. Into your 90s and beyond, you are going to be exercising every single week. That's it. Don't argue with yourself. Don't allow your... I've actually spoke out loud to myself before. If I've got up in the morning, I don't fancy it today. Shut up, you're going. And I'll go like that. Just don't have the conversation. Because if you want to be able to still walk up the stairs, walk along the beach, walk through the forest, not have a frame around your toilet when you're sitting down to get back up again.
Doing your butt sludge.
No seat in your bath and a stair lift, you know. You need to keep exercising. And that's going to improve your bone density, your joints, your posture. I mean, this is a big investment in your future. Every time you switch sitting on the sofa, scrolling through Facebook for a run or a workout, you're adding to your pension pot of life.
Well, you see, now I'm going to add something and I'm going to ask for your opinion there though, Scott, because I think for most people, even my age, even though we are living in a longer lifetimes and so on. I run, but I didn't start off running. The whole idea of running a marathon or a half marathon or for me, when I started was terrifying. I just wanted to make it to the end of the road. And I think that is where we have to be kind to ourselves. And I always say this, aim for the end of the road. don't aim for a marathon. Don't necessarily, you've got to have a goal, but don't get obsessed with that, because basically anything that you do better than you did yesterday is a bonus.
Yeah.
And improvement should be small steps. So even getting up off the sofa, doing 5 sit-ups or doing... Or just going for a walk.
All you want to do
is better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. And it's all about...
Walking up steps instead of using a lift.
Yeah, and going parking at the other end of the car park and walking in. But listen, as long as you're moving forward, you're moving forward. Even if you fall flat on your face, you are moving forward. It's physically impossible to fall flat on your face backwards. So just go for it. And as I said to you a minute ago, every time you switch those things for going up the stairs instead of the lift, you're just adding to that pension pot of life. You're just chucking more in each time you decide to do something that's going to push you.
So to put this in the context of menopause, there isn't a new formula. There isn't a new way of thinking. It's the same way of thinking, but it's even more applicable to women in menopause, because from what I'm understanding, the benefits could actually be more visible and more significant, because we're going through those extra challenges. Does that make sense?
Yes, because if, for instance, like we were saying, if your brain is malnourished, in menopause, it's an even bigger struggle that you've got all the changes in your emotions and everything. So if you've got a nourished brain, it's much better to deal with what you're going through than if you've got a malnourished brain, right?
Yes. You're putting a ball and chain around your ankle when you don't eat well. Listen, we all don't eat well. I'm not saying no one's ever going to have a pizza again. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is, if you really want to move forward fast and maybe reduce those symptoms or get rid of them, and that's whether it's in menopause or other chronic illnesses that you might have through poor nutrition, then if you change the thing that's causing it and nourish yourself, you're going to have the chain and ball taken off your ankle and you can move forward faster.
Can I ask a question, put this in a really, really tangible, very, very relevant example? So this is something that's happened to me since menopause. It's never happened to me before.
Tight vagina?
Oh, Lord, I can't believe you said that.
That's one of the symptoms, I'm told.
You knew he was going to say.
All the guys are now going, can't wait till she's going for the menopause.
Absolutely. Great. I always thought when I was a child, and I must have been about 10, 15 years old, I always thought my mum was just angry at mealtime. Sorry, mum. But my mum would get, you know, pretty cranky at mealtime and we'd be nervous. We'd be laying the table pretty, you know, worried that we'd put the knife and fork not quite where it should be. Then dinner would be served, we'd eat dinner and everything would be all right. But that half an hour before dinner was really quite tough. It's only now, as I head into menopause, that I understand what hangry is. I had no idea that actually, and God bless my husband, because he now carries around snacks. Because I might be out somewhere and he's like, oh my word, she's hungry. And he'll hand something to me, because it does appear that, to put that in the context of sort of short-term malnutrition, that there are things that we need to be guarding against. And one of them is that at that time of day, your brain, it must be a brain thing.
Be nourished.
That's all it is.
It's probably a sugar dip or something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be a whole, it could be a whole host of things, but...
But at most women I talk to can relate to hangry.
Oh, I'm always hangry.
Oh. Okay, we're going to steer clear of Mel.
It's true. If I don't eat little and often, then I'm hangry.
Oh, wow.
It's about being balanced, like keeping your
blood sugar
balanced.
Yeah, so your body, you want to keep the machine irritated. You want to keep the machine running all day long. You don't want it to dip and stuff. So that's where you eat regularly.
And you have to learn how to recognize it as well. Like, I recognize it's coming on. So I can feel that I'm getting, oh, I need something. And then I recognize now that I need food. It could be something quick and easy, you know, like just grabbing something that I would have prepared the night before. But I recognize it. I just feel I need to eat. I don't know. It's like I've always been called a gremlin since I was young. My dad calls me his gremlin. So I think they always joke about it. It's like a gremlin that, you know, remember the film?
Yes.
I just need to eat.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So I want to recap and then I want to look at solutions, because I think to recap, and please jump in at any point, we've recognized that actually short-term solutions, to name Ozempic, I'm pretty sure that there's a lot of people at this point in time between Christmas and New Year who are thinking about the new year, and that seems like a tangible and very quick, fast solution to a longer term problem. So we're talking about the fact that it doesn't come. If you want long lasting effects, if you want effects, that it has to be something that is going to create real change, and the change starts.
Otherwise, the malnourishment remains.
Yeah.
If you're just eating less of the poor stuff,
yeah,
because your injections make you feel like you don't want to eat anything. You're just eating less of bad stuff.
Right.
Technically, you could be more malnourished.
Yeah. And make more stupid decisions.
Mm. And can you imagine the effects you're having on your body?
Yes.
You're not actually nourishing your body because you're feeling sick because you've had this injection to lose weight. Then what nourishment has your body got?
Okay. So we need to change the way we think. We need to nourish the brain. The brain is as important as every other part of the body.
Most important.
Okay.
One of the most important.
I don't know why I didn't think of this before.
And so, can I just add something else? Yeah. That just made me think of something. This is going to blow some people's minds, but the quickest way to lose unhealthy fat is on the most calories possible. So let me explain that. Because everyone's going to go,
Judy.
What?
What?
So let's say that your maintenance calories per day is 2,500. Let's just say.
Okay.
You would lose more fat on 2,200 calories than you would on 1,200 calories.
Okay.
Because on 1,200 calories, you're back to malnourishment again. So now the body is not going to work at its optimum. Let me give you an example. I had a lady that came to me. She'd done 850 calories per day for 365 days.
Whoa.
She lost a stone in a month. The next 11 months, she only lost 2 pounds. 11 months, only lost 2 pounds.
Right.
Her hair fell out. She couldn't remember what she'd done an hour earlier. She couldn't get out of bed in the mornings. She was like, her body was breaking down.
She was starving.
But the
herself.
Reason that she only lost the 2 pounds, yeah, she was starving herself, malnourishing herself over that 11 months because her body was holding on to
her dear life.
Eventually, she would have had to eat herself. Her body would have ate into more of the muscle and eventually she would have just broken down. However, had she, let's say, for example, stayed on the 2,200, it depends on the person, she's now nourished. And eating regularly throughout the day, the right foods, the right balance on the plate, plenty of hydration, that fat just comes off so fast. You know, dress sizes just drop for fun. And it stays that way because you've nourished the body to fat loss rather than malnourished it.
And speeded up the metabolism.
Yeah, so back to where I said, bring the person up instead of the calories down.
Okay, so this is real tangible science. So this is why we're saying that something like Ozempic, which is, you know, a very popular choice right now, it will have effects. You will lose that first.
You will.
That first
short term.
But your metabolism is going to totally go downwards. So as soon as you stop it, you haven't got a fast metabolism anymore. So you're just going, whatever you eat is just going to pile on. So what's the point?
Oh, wow. That's not good news.
It's just going to go round
and
round.
And the weight you've lost is probably muscle, bit of water,
some bone,
and the fat. They'll hold on to the fat long as it can because that's your survival pouch.
So you're literally saying that if a body goes into survival mode because it doesn't have enough calories to maintain itself, it's going to hold on to the fat because it's literally subconsciously saying to itself, "This is our emergency.
This is
what we need if we are really in a real dire straits. So we're not going to let that fat go."
Eventually it will have to, but it will hold on to it for a while. People will tell you there's no such thing as starvation mode. Well, that's not true. Whether you want to call it that or not is up to you, but the body will try and survive on the calories you give it. Whereas if you constantly feed the body, I use the analogy of a log burner. You know what a log burner is?
Mm.
Yeah. If you want that fire to burn all day, every day, efficiently, you wouldn't put the kindling and the paper and the logs on, wait for it all to burn out, leave it a couple of hours, put the kindling, the paper, and just chuck a log on every now and then. It'll burn forever. It will never stop.
Brilliant. I like this. This is really cool. Okay, so we've got that. So we need to to bring nutrition to our bodies. We need to not malnourish our brains as well, because that's when we make stupid decisions as well.
We do.
Right? And I also think, I correct me if I'm wrong, but if we malnourish our brains through our lifestyle and our food and the good food choices and bad food choices that we make, if we make bad food choices, that also affects our sleep as well, if our brains are malnourished.
Yeah, sleep's huge. Yeah.
And we need sleep to be able to be healthy and to also effectively lose weight.
And correct. To function.
If you don't sleep well, it's a much harder job to lose fat, because you're weak. Your body's not working at its optimum. That ball and chain's back around your neck.
Which again is something that happens in menopause, is one of the big symptoms is that you get interrupted sleep. Which is just, I don't know, did you get that?
Oh my goodness, I have to wake up at 2 a.m. and not be able to go back to sleep again.
Okay. So we're
hormone related.
We're looking at a lifestyle change and a change of mindset rather than a quick fix.
The great thing about that is that once you've built that strong, powerful, resilient body that's working at its optimum, then you can have the noughties and it doesn't affect you so negatively, because you're not being kicked while you're down. You're up. So you can bat these things off. So you can have the drink every weekend. You can do this, do that. And it doesn't all pile back on again, because you're burning it now. You've got a machine that works properly now. So it's not so, it's not negatively affected as much as it would be if you are in a weak position.
Okay, so then I want to come back and say, because I know that we're going to talk about six-pack in a second, and as I mentioned, I started out at the very beginning and I said, this show is not a big push for six-pack revolution. It's looking at the psychology, the physiological effects of what we're doing to ourselves as a society and being able to come up with a solution. And six-pack is something that we're going to be referring to in just a moment. For anybody that's thinking about this and thinking about a lifestyle change and actually making sense of what we said and applying it to themselves, I still think, and I want to revisit this argument, okay, that's all well and good, but how the heck do I fit that clean eating, fitness, exercise into my life? I don't have time. I've got 3 kids. I'm holding down a job. My husband's really busy. On the weekends, I've got to take them to ballet. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. What is the answer to that?
Can I jump in with this one? Okay. I like working in analogies. Is that all right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I think
fine.
They go in people's brains better as well. You can remember things. Let's use the six-pack revolution program as an example, right? That's eating 6 times a day with plenty of hydration. And that 6 times a day can be snacks and meal replacement shakes, or it can be full food. If this was a game show, the six-pack revolution, you was going to win €1 million at the end of it, how easy would you find it to eat those 6 times a day? That's all you had to do.
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course I would.
You would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And actually, every time you ate one of those meals or snacks, you'd be smiling inside, knowing you was one step closer to your €1 million. In fact, even if you was in a really weird situation, you could run in the toilet and do a shake or something. You'd be like, you would find a way over all the obstacles to get that €1 million just to eat 6 times a day. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. If I was going to give you £10 million right now, and you can keep it and do whatever you like with it, no strings attached. Sorry, euros. Let's go back to euros. No strings attached. Would you take it?
Well, of course you would.
Of course you would. No one in their right mind would they? What about if I said, there's a new string attached now to that £10 million. You can have it, spend it on whatever you like for 2 days, but on day 3, you're going to drop down dead. Would you still take the £10
million? Well, of course not.
Why not?
Well, because I'm looking further than 2 days. I mean, because 2 days is not enough to make up for what I'm going to lose.
So your life's worth more than €10 million, right?
Absolutely.
But you just told me for $1 million, you'd manage to eat 6 times a day, every single day for 75 days and change your life forever. And this is your life we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Karen and Mel are staring at me. So put that into real terms. For a mum who's...
It can be done.
Okay.
If you really want it, you'd find a way to do it.
Well, I'm going to ask Karen that because you've done it and you are a mum and you have a busy lifestyle.
It was really simple because I had so much more energy because I was eating right that I could face, you know, in before I had done it, I used to always face the afternoon really tired and looking at people and saying, how do they have so much energy? I'm so tired in the afternoons. When I started eating correctly, I always exercised. Exercise wasn't an issue because exercise is something I love. So I had always done it pre doing the program. But my nutrition wasn't right. I would eat a heavy carb, like pasta for lunch or something like that. So I was always really tired in the afternoon. So having so much more energy gave me more time on my hands. I could take my daughter to her lessons with more energy. I wasn't thinking about, I wish it was time for bed at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, how can I get through the rest of the day? Because I had a lot of energy. Plus, I was organized. On the weekends, I would prepare meals that I could, I'd prep food to put in the fridge so that preparing meals was easier. And it was really simple.
Okay.
And I felt really good. So it really, really helped me.
Okay.
I think the energy was the key factor.
Our biggest demographic is 35 to 65-year-old men and women. So they're all mums and dads, mostly.
Okay, interesting. 42-year-old male.
Okay, I think it is about you have to really want something. You have to really want to change your life. You have to want to live longer for your children, especially if you're a mother. If someone's telling you, like, I know, can I use this? My father, when I was younger, he used to smoke. The doctor told him, do you want to see your children grow up? And he said, yes, of course I do. He went, then you need to stop smoking. My father went to the sea, threw his packets of cigarettes in the sea. I know he shouldn't have done that. But he stopped smoking there and then.
You have to have the motivation.
Well, my mother didn't want to stop smoking. On the other hand, it's totally different. She started with the neck, but if he can do it, I'm going to do it. But mentally, she wasn't ready to stop smoking because someone didn't give her that analogy. So she started with Nicorette chewing gum, chewing it every day. They went on to normal chewing gum, bit of a nightmare. But if you really want something, you're going to do it. The doctor told my dad, do you want to live?
Okay, well, let me come back to this. Okay. I'm really excited about this because I love the fact that we've looked at this from an intellectual point of view. We've not just said, okay, we want to lose weight and look good. We've actually looked at the science. I love the science behind what's happening. You mentioned for menopausal women that we actually are going through so many more changes and emotional changes. And if we're feeding the wrong fuel to our body, we're not going to be able to cope with those. And that's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And there are so many aspects of this. I loved, Scott, what you said about, because I'm coming back to the menopausal bit for a second. I loved what you said about tofu. We know that tofu and that there's pulses and so on that will assist with the drops in estrogen and so on and so forth. And also we know that, I also love the fact that we know that as women of menopausal age, one of the most essential things that we need to do is to strengthen our bodies. And as you said, if we still want to be walking into our old age, we've got to do it now, not in 10 years' time, not in 20 years' time. We need to build the foundation now. I also love the fact that we need to get in the gym to up our testosterone so we can have great sex with our husbands or wives or whoever, partners, whoever. That is without saying. How do we then, and I think this, my question is to you, Scott, how do we convert somebody who wants it to someone who's going to do it?
Well, if they want it, you're halfway there, as Mel was just saying. You've got to want to do it. And there's all various ways, right? So you can start off where you just start watching what you're eating. You go to the gym maybe once a week and don't make a big deal out of it, a bit like walking to the end of the road that you were still running to the end of the road, bite off in small chunks. Or if you really want to do it now and get it done, get the job done in a short amount of time and then live the best of both worlds moving forward, then maybe you would want to join a program or somewhere you've got that constant support and someone who knows what they're talking about. You just follow it. You haven't got to pay any too much attention to it. You just read it, do what I'm told. And
so someone else can do the thinking for you.
Yeah.
And again, that's just dropped into my brain because for a lot of people, I think, let's talk about SPR because I think for a lot of people, Six Pack Revolution is a bit daunting. There's a lot of,
The word six pack is.
I know,
but it's such a big brand now. It's kind of, I don't know what to do with it because many people go, oh, that's not for me. But as that's why I say a core six pack core of values rather than a visual six pack. Our biggest thing is people that get a six pack is like not even probably 1% of the people that join the program. You know, you've heard me say before, we go from an 18 dress to a 12, whatever it is, and these in one wave of the program. That's the real magic that happens rather than an actual six pack.
And also everyone has a different goal. It's not based around one goal. At the beginning of the program, we always ask people to visualize their goal. How do they want to look at or how do they want to feel? How do they want to look? They do a general introduction. It's so different. It's so personal for every single person. Some people just want to...
I want more energy to, energy with
to
my
play
kids.
With my children. Exactly. I want to look good for my wedding day. I want to feel better in myself. I want to love myself again. So it's not always about aesthetics. It's also about that feel-good factor.
Okay. Also, what about when you talk about children? If you think about us as parents, we're their teachers, right? So if we're constantly showing them that eating poorly, drinking loads of alcohol, getting drunk, stuffing our faces with chocolate, hating what we see in the mirror, not loving ourselves, and everything's going wrong, and the world's against us, and so on and so on and so on, what are we teaching them? And this is why history repeats itself. It's not a coincidence that people that end up in prison, quite often so do the kids. People that are on drugs, so are the kids. People that are alcoholics, so do the kids. So even if you can't do it for yourself, maybe you want to start thinking about what you're doing for those that are looking up to you and following your example, potentially.
Okay. So we've got the psychology behind it. We've got the physical behind it. We know the process of eating something that's going to spike you and then put you in the toilet. And we're back to butt sludge again. We've got the what we want to do, the goal.
Do you want to live instead of just exist? Because life's great if you allow it to be.
For sure.
It's really good.
But you're
asking, how do you get it done?
No, I'm actually commenting on the fact that a lot of people would be listening to this or watching this, and they have the desire, they have the want, they have...
Do they have the restraint, resolve, determination?
But not... Yes, you might have this restraint and the determination, but what you don't have is the support and the knowledge, because I think that's where what Scott's talking about comes in. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know half of the things we've discussed today. I have no idea about that. So there's a certain amount of... With what you do, Scott, what you guys do is trust the process, because there is, and this is why we're coming to the end of this conversation to really talk about six pack, because I wanted to investigate the whole psychology, physiological aspects of this, particularly when it comes to menopause, because when Scott first turned around to me and said, six pack revolution is going to work for women with menopause, I was like, bollocks to that. I'm sorry, but you're not a menopausal woman. You don't know, because it is tough. But now I'm understanding the sort of psychology and the physiological issues about that. So if we've got everything in place, and the one thing that is missing is the support, is the coaching, is the encouragement that somebody who, let's face it, if they're at home and they're doing this by themselves, doesn't necessarily have in the family dynamic. And then also, obviously, the knowledge. So knowing what to eat, how much to exercise to create the impact. I'm going to tell you, I'm kind of now in the mindset that I can trust the process. However, how long before you see results? Because I've been on these things where you're 6 months in and you're just like, really? I'm still not seeing anything.
Well, it's a 75-day program that we do. And some people will see results in the first week and some will see the big wows in the final week. But it's a 75-day program. It's not a 25-day or a 55-day or a 65-day. It's a 75-day program. And that's for the mental, physical, and emotional win, not just the physical. So you need to get from day one to day 75 for it to change your life forever. And there's more of a chance then, once you've gone through that process, that you've ditched the things that are holding you back. Because again, we're back to here again. If it was something you could do in just a week, then this bit wouldn't work, because this takes time to rewire. So rewire your body and your mind. It takes 75 days. and it's life-changing in so many different aspects. But talking about the menopause, because that's like fat loss, muscle gain, all that sort of, we're actually going to go specifically to the menopause. Although the six-pack revolution has been amazing for menopause, unintentionally, I didn't create it for that, but we just so happened to have great success with it. Next year, May, September, we are creating the biggest, best, most powerful menopause program on the planet. It's going to have its own website, its own app. I'm not going to be the face of it, obviously. I wouldn't push my luck beyond there, but I will be supporting it. And it will be basically women will be facing it. We'll do great Zooms with bladder specialists and menopause specialists, and we'll go lives and all the way through supporting ladies every minute of every day from before they start to after they finish.
This is specifically for women in
just
menopause.
For menopause.
This is cool.
It's got its own thing.
If someone's listening to the show,
he's preparing it for when I go into menopause.
Absolutely. It's just especially
the reason
for
it's gonna be, the reason I've worked out it's on May/September time is because we're not messing about here. We're doing the research, we're doing the focus groups, we're doing the branding exercises, we're speaking to all the experts. I was speaking on stage at a menopause event, again, scared to death, 2,000 menopausal women staring at me thinking, what does he bloody know? And I got to meet so many prolific people in this area, and when I told them what I wanted to try and do, they were all for it. Yeah. And so I'm lucky now, I can just tap into all of them.
I think this comes back to the fact, Scott, I would say that menopausal women are the forgotten women. We know that 99% of medical research with older bodies misses out the fact that women have menopause, and it doesn't take into account menopause. And I think the fact that if we are lucky to hit menopause, I mean, we're lucky to get here.
For sure.
We're lucky to have lasted this far. And that's the positive. But this new addressing women in this challenge, in this challenging time of life. I mean, I'm like, can we not have it now?
I wish I could, but I don't want to do a funny version of six-pack revolution. I want it to have its own identity and actually really make a difference. So I haven't forgotten you.
Thank you. I'm so glad. I feel very touched. but for the time being, even if you are in menopause, you're going to see
the program's amazing anyway.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. I'm going to ask you guys to give me all the details so that we can put that under here so anybody who's been watching or listening to this show can actually get involved in this program with all of the philosophy, with the theory behind it, with the program that is based on diet and also exercise. But more than that, it's about life change.
Yes.
I'm going to ask, if you don't mind, ladies, I'm going to ask Scott, I'm going to put the pressure on him right now, to give me a closing comment. Give me your what would you want to see every woman experience?
When you nourish your body, by default, you nutrify your mind. And when they both work together, they are the most powerful partnership you will ever come across. So on that basis, we have only got one place to live, right? Look after it. And much love to everybody.
Oh,
chin to that.
Cheers to that.
Cheers, guys. Thank you very, very much indeed. That's it. That's it. Yeah, I didn't make him wear a wig.
I was shaking.
Is that good enough ending?
That was great fun. No, that ending was perfect. That was absolutely brilliant.